Good afternoon. This is State Senator Ryan Aumont calling. I appreciate all of those that have taken the time to join me this afternoon for my second COVID-19 telephone town hall. As many of you may know who are listening, I typically hold two telephone town hall events a year, one typically in the spring, along with a series of live town hall events that I hold, and then again in the fall. However, during these uncertain historic times, unparalleled times, we are trying to provide as much information to you as we possibly can. And certainly a telephone town hall gives me an opportunity to speak to hundreds and thousands. The last telephone town hall, we had nearly 3,000 participants who joined that call. It gives me an opportunity to speak to you and provide you with an update. For those who have not listened before, just by way of format, I'm going to provide a brief update here at the outset, some of the things that the General Assembly has been working on with respect to COVID-19 response. I have a few folks that have joined me this afternoon remotely for this conversation. And I'm going to introduce them in detail shortly, but we have Lisa Riggs from the Economic Development Company of Lancaster County. We have Mr. Tom Baldridge, who's the president and CEO of the Lancaster Chamber. We have Shama. I'll allow Shama to introduce his full name, but from the Office of Unemployment Compensation Service Centers, we'll be representing that department on the call and answering, helping with some of the unemployment compensation questions that I know folks are likely to have. And then Dr. David Gasparic, the VP and Regional Medical Director at WellSpan Medical Group, is on the call this afternoon as well. So I'm sure you'll look forward to hearing from those folks. I'm very grateful that they've agreed to participate. Also during the call this afternoon, I have two questions that I'm going to ask of participants. The first question I'm going to ask here in a moment at the outset of the call, and then you will have have the opportunity to share your responses directly with me. And I'll announce those results towards the conclusion of the call. I'm going to be asking you specific questions about the measures that have been proposed by state officials regarding the COVID response. And then also asking a question later about the appropriate checks and balances between branches of government and the governor's emergency powers. So I would appreciate your participation in those questions. I'll guide you through that when we get to that portion here in a moment. I do want to outline, and I would encourage folks that if you are not receiving regular updates from my office and you would like to be kept up to date on a regular basis, I would encourage you to visit Senator Aumont, SenatorAument.com. Visit our website. We do keep information there current. You also have the opportunity to submit comments directly to me through that through the webpage. And you also can sign up for our e-newsletter. And so we do send that out on a regular basis to make sure that you have the latest relevant information and you know who to contact if you have questions. So I'd encourage you to visit that website. We have also just launched in the last 2 days what I am calling a Restore and Reimagine a Stronger Pennsylvania initiative. And the goal of this initiative is to reach out to you, my constituents, to reach out to small business owners, to business leaders, to employers, employees, nonprofit leaders, education leaders, community leaders, residents, and give you a platform, an opportunity to share the challenges that you are facing and ideas, specific ideas and solutions that you have to overcome barriers as we begin the process of restoring and rebuilding and reimagining a stronger Pennsylvania. So if you go to my website, you will see we've created a tab right there on the homepage of the website called Restore and Reimagine PA. Go there, please. Take a look at the information that we have there, some of the events that we are going to be hosting from Zoom, roundtable conversations, to telephone town hall conversations, to a Facebook Live event that we're scheduling in the very near term. I do look forward to hearing from you. Our intent is to put together a report, to publish a blueprint that is intended to inform legislative action. I certainly have some ideas, and I'll be sharing those ideas with you, but I really want to hear from those that I represent. You go to that webpage, you will also see a timeline that specifically outlines some of the steps that I've taken in response to COVID-19. Beginning on March the 16th, when we announced the temporary closing of our district office, to steps that I took to co-sponsor legislation providing economic injury resources to small businesses, on to April 15th, where the Senate passed legislation to begin the process to reopen Pennsylvania, including bringing Pennsylvania alignment with federal guidelines with respect to essential versus non-essential businesses. More recent legislation that I've sponsored opening garden centers and bringing greater clarity to for our garden centers. And then just this week, legislation that Senator Martin and myself supported providing critical funding for our nursing facilities. That timeline is there for you right up until the last few days, where I worked with Senator Udicek to introduce legislation to change the governor's emergency declaration powers to promote greater collaboration and transparency, and the launching of the Restore and Reimagine Pennsylvania initiative. So all of that is there with hyperlinks, so you can go and you can see the specific legislation as well as any letters that we sent to the governor or any other state officials. Again, that's at the website, senatoramit.com, Restore and Reimagine Pennsylvania, and I look forward to your feedback. Should you have any questions for me or any of our panelists this afternoon, would ask you to press star 3, and we'll have folks get some information from you, and I will try to get to your question in a timely manner. Let me first go, as I indicated, I have two questions for you during the call to give you an opportunity to provide immediate feedback. The first question I want to ask right now, so you'll be able to respond with the corresponding number on your phone. And here we go. So question number one, there are a number of measures that have been proposed by state officials regarding the process Pennsylvania should use to reopen. I'm going to briefly describe four proposals, and after I've introduced all four, I would ask you to decide which approach you believe is best for Pennsylvania. First, remain under stay-at-home orders as currently outlined by Governor Wolf until he determines a county or region is safe to reopen. Second, begin slowly reopening Pennsylvania businesses that can safely operate in accordance with CDC health and safety standards and practice social distancing. Three, fully reopen all Pennsylvania businesses immediately, regardless of location or their status as essential or non-essential. So to recap, which approach do you believe is best for Pennsylvania? Press 1 if you believe we should remain under the stay-at-home order from Governor Wolf until he decides it's appropriate for a county or region to open. Press 2 if you believe we should slowly reopen Pennsylvania businesses that can safely operate in accordance with CDC health and safety standards and practice social distancing. Or press 3 if you think we should fully open all Pennsylvania businesses immediately, regardless of location or their status as essential or non-essential. So I'm going to give you all a couple of minutes to respond to that question. Again, press 1, remain under the current stay-at-home order. 2, if you believe we should more slowly reopen Pennsylvania businesses according to CDC health and safety standards, and press 3 if you believe we should fully reopen all Pennsylvania businesses immediately. So I'll give you minutes. That will remain open here for about 10 or 15 minutes before I get to my next question. So let me introduce the folks I have on the call with me remotely. So if there's a question that you'd like that is relevant to them, I will pass you along to them to have the opportunity to answer as I facilitate our conversation today. As I've said, we have Lisa Riggs, who's the president of the Economic Development Company of Lancaster County, an organization focused on helping to retain and expand businesses here in Lancaster County. We have Tom Baldridge. Tom is the president and CEO of the Lancaster Chamber, an organization committed to representing the business community. And to that end, the Chamber, in partnership with the Economic Development Company of Lancaster County, recently launched an economic recovery plan designed to ensure a safe and sustained reopening of the county's economy. And I'm going to give Tom and Lisa a moment in just a second to talk about, briefly highlight that for you at the outset. We have Shama is the director of the Office of UC Service Centers and is representing the Department of Labor and Industry to address unemployment compensation questions this afternoon. And I'm very pleased that we have Dr. David Gasparic, the Vice President and Regional Medical Director of WellSpan Medical Group. So before I get to your questions, let me first go to, as we're beginning to talk now about a plan to restore, rebuild, and reimagine a stronger Pennsylvania, Lisa or Tom or both of you can very briefly just talk about the collaborative work that's being done here in Lancaster County to put in place an economic recovery plan.
Lisa, you can go.
Sure. And first of all, Senator Ahman, thank you so much for the forum this morning, and delighted to hear so many people are calling in and want to get a little bit of an update from you and ask some questions. So just very briefly, the Lancaster Chamber and the Economic Development Company are working very closely together because we're hearing loud and clear how urgent the need is to get businesses back up and running, and also because a lot of businesses have confusion, questions, whether it's from themselves or their employees, on the myriad of guidance coming out related to being safe and all these questions about public health that many of us have never had to deal with before. So really the plan that we've put together is how do we prepare so that when we can open, and hopefully as quickly as we can open, that businesses can do that in a safe manner for themselves, their employees, their customers, their clients. One other quick point I would just add, and then I'll turn it over to Tom briefly, is the vast majority of businesses in Lancaster County are small businesses. Many sole proprietors, companies with 5 and fewer employees or 10 and fewer employees. And the bulk of the work of our plan is to make sure we're getting resources into these companies' hands, because often the smallest companies are the ones that have the least bandwidth to navigate the complexities of what we're dealing with today. So a measure of our success is the survivability and sustainability of the vast small business network in our county, which is really the hallmark of what makes Lancaster County so special. Tom, what can you add?
Thanks, Lisa. First off, Senator Ahmet, I want to thank you for hosting this as well, and I also want to just commend your leadership throughout this whole crisis. Your kind of availability, your videos, your posts on social media, and your willingness to do these types of events like this are I think, go a tremendous way in ensuring people are aware of what's going on, and your leadership in Harrisburg is much appreciated. So thank you. The only thing I would want to add specifically to what Lisa outlined is that this plan was born about 3-4 weeks ago, well, a little bit more than that, actually, solely with the intent to try to get Lancaster County open for business as quickly as we possibly can. We recognize that path to recovery is very complicated. It must involve public health safety measures to ensure that we don't experience a setback. And it's going to involve a lot of work within businesses and with their workforce to be sure that they're prepared for what we're calling the new normal, with retrofitted businesses and personal protective equipment for employees and employers alike. This plan was intended to mobilize this community around those initiatives and to make sure that the moment we get the green light or create our own green light to reopen, we are in a position to do so safely and sustainably. So We've been extremely excited since we've launched this now a little bit more than 2 weeks ago. We've mobilized a tremendous group of volunteers. They represent the entire county, big, medium, and small businesses. We all agree that the emphasis is on small business because of their critical role they play in our overall economy. And we're off to the races to make sure that we can bring as many companies with us to the other side of this pandemic successfully and poised for a great future.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Tom and Lisa, and thank you for the work that you're both doing, and just appreciate the collaboration, just very strong partnerships here with the business community as well as our federal, state, and local elected officials, and just appreciate what you're doing. Let's get right to the questions. Again, if you have a question for me, for anyone on the panel, it is *3 this afternoon, *3. I'm going to go right to, we've got a couple questions here about UC, and since we have Shama on the phone, I know that the department just made an announcement this morning with respect to the pandemic unemployment assistance system. So I'm going to go to a question first, and then Shama, give you a chance to answer that, and maybe you can talk a little bit about the PUA system. So let's go here first. I believe it is Matthew, and Matthew, I believe you have a question about PUA. Go ahead.
Yes, I do. Thank you for hosting the town hall, by the way. I applied for the PUA back in April 18th. The day went live, and obviously today I saw that we can file for our weekly certifications. I can get 2 weeks into it, going back from March into April, and then the darn thing keeps kicking me into the application process again. In other words, it won't let me proceed to week 3 or week 4. It keeps telling me to reapply, even though I applied a month ago. So nobody to call, nobody to get support from as far as how to proceed and why this thing keeps kicking me into the original application. I don't want to apply a second time where it's only going to screw things up more and think I'm trying to, you know, that I'm two people or something. So, I mean, it's happening with other people. We don't know what to do, how to fix this, and, you know, what to do next.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Matthew, for the question. Shama, if you could perhaps address that question for us and talk a little bit about the announcement that the department just made this morning, and perhaps also for those that are having some difficulty reaching someone to talk to with respect to unemployment compensation, if you could provide that information as well.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me, Senator. And thank you for the opportunity to help educate everyone on what we're doing here at the department. So to answer your specific question, yes, we are aware of that issue. It's for some reason, the system, as people go through and they're claiming all of their weeks, like you mentioned, they'll get to a certain point and they keep looping in. We are working with the vendor as we speak to resolve that issue. So we just ask for your patience, and we are hoping to have that resolved today. So if you can try again tomorrow to claim all of your weeks, then you'll get your payments if you have your direct deposit already set up within 5 to 7 days, and then if you have the debit card, that'll get mailed to you, and you should be receiving that in the mail with the benefits on your debit card. In general, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance is a new program that was passed under the Federal CARES Act. This program is mainly geared to individuals who are not eligible for regular unemployment. In normal times, in non-COVID times, self-employed and gig workers, for example, would not be able to apply for regular unemployment, so the federal government passed the Federal CARES Act, and which is going to allow all of those groups of people who are impacted by COVID-19 to be able to receive benefits through this new PUA system. And to the question on how to contact us, if you're experiencing any issues, we have a email account, UCPUA@PA.gov, up and running. We are responding to emails all day up until about, I think it's about 10 p.m. when our last person stops working. And we are working right now to build a phone line for people to be able to call in and have their questions asked and answered as well.
Excellent. Thank you for that. And I would also encourage folks, if our office can be helpful and certainly make a connection for you to help answer some of these questions, we're happy to do that and help track some of these claims. You can contact us here at 717-627-0036, or again, go to the website, senatoramit.com, and send in a question, and someone here will call you, and we're happy to help. And I do want to say, Shama, we had a hearing, the Labor and Industry Committee had a hearing this week with the Secretary of Labor and Industry, and I know there was a lot of frustration expressed by members on behalf of our constituents about these issues and about a lack of responsiveness to some of the legislative offices. I will say, since that hearing and over the last 24 hours, our staff has the work on your end communicating with our offices and our staff. The communication has improved dramatically, and so I just want to thank you for that, and would encourage certainly that to continue going forward. There are a few folks here that do have questions just from a healthcare standpoint, and both from an antibody testing standpoint to treatment. And so I want to throw a question here, I believe, to Dr. Gasparic. Let me get to the question. I believe it is Jenny. Let me make sure. Jenny, are you there? I believe you have a question specifically about drug treatment.
Yes. Yes, so, I'm here.
Go ahead. You can go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, so I wanted to know if we have the drug hydroxychloroquine here in Pennsylvania, and especially Lancaster County, that we're seeing on national news, but I don't see anything about it on local news that it's being used for the treatment of COVID-19.
However, still being effective.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Appreciate the question. Dr. Gasparic, if maybe you could address that question specifically and perhaps talk maybe more broadly about what you're seeing at the WellSpan from a testing and certainly from a treatment perspective.
Sure. First of all, thank you, Senator Almond, for the opportunity to speak with your constituents today. And honestly, thank you for your leadership that you've shown to WellSpan and for our other healthcare providers during this COVID-19 crisis. We really appreciate the strong support that you and your staff have provided. As far as treatment, you know, this is something that changes a little bit every day. You'll hear new things coming out in the news as studies are released. To specifically answer your question about hydroxychloroquine, yes, we do have that medication in Lancaster County. It's something that we track on a regular basis within WellSpan to make sure that it's being used appropriately. As you've probably heard, hydroxychloroquine is historically used for arthritic conditions, things like lupus. And at this time, at least in the ambulatory setting, so in the outpatient practices, that's still how it's being used. Outpatient physicians, family physicians, are not using this either prophylactically or as treatment for COVID. Hydroxychloroquine has been really reserved at this point for those that are in the hospital, the sickest of the sick, intubated. That is one of the treatments that we're using in the hospital. Now, that's usually combined with other therapies, usually antivirals. So you know that COVID is a virus that can't be killed with an antibiotic, like if you had a sinus infection or pneumonia. But there are antiviral medications. There's been a few of them that have been tried so far. And like I said, the press releases change from week to week as to which one is the most effective. But we are usually using the hydroxychloroquine in combination with an antiviral for those patients that end up intubated in the hospital. The good thing that I can report is that we are seeing a pretty good success rate here in our area, at least in our WellSpan hospitals. As you probably heard, of those intubated in New York City, there was only about a 12% survival rate of those that were intubated. And within WellSpan, we're currently seeing about a 60% survival rate of those that are intubated, which is really, it's a great thing to see. So like I said, this is what we're currently doing, but things seem to be changing on a fairly regular basis.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Appreciate that, Doctor, here in a minute, I'm going to read the results from the first question and go to the second question that I have for the audience, the listeners this afternoon. I'm going to go to Wes. Wes, you've been on the call the longest, and looks like you have a question specific to the governor's emergency authority. Go ahead, Wes.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on here real briefly. Yes. Clearly, Governor Tom Wolf's orders have done a lot of harm to a lot of businesses and a lot of families, and very, very unconstitutional, very much an overreach. And I was just wondering if there's anything that my question essentially is, what has to happen, sir? Is there, if anything, that can be put in place, anything that can be put in place to ensure that this overreach does not happen again?
I appreciate the question. And to answer your question directly, yes, there are steps that the General Assembly can take. Nearly, essentially every step that the General Assembly would need to take. And I do think we have to take a look at the broad authority the governor has, emergency power authority the governor has. It goes back to statute from 1935, 1955, and then an update that broadened that authority in the late 1970s. Our governor, as compared to many other throughout the country, many others who are using very broad authority, but our governor has even more expansive powers. For example, many states limit the emergency action to 30 days or perhaps 45 or 60 days. Our governor, under an expansion in the late 1970s of his authority, has been granted 90 days without needing to renew that declaration or seek legislative approval. I think that needs to change. And so I, on April 30th, and again, you can go to the website and you can see the specifics of the legislation. I've introduced legislation to change the governor's emergency declaration powers, limit to 30 days without legislative approval, and promotes greater collaboration and transparency, which has been a real concern of mine, and I'm certainly going to insist on going forward. Many folks are familiar, there is a resolution, it's a concurrent resolution that would repeal the governor's declaration, Senate Resolution 323. I believe there's a similar House resolution, I'm not sure of the how that's numbered, but SR 323. All of these proposals that I've just talked about, including the Senate resolution, would require the governor's signature. I know there's some disagreement with that on the resolution, not to go into the weeds here, but the statute seems to imply that the General Assembly on a majority vote could revoke the governor's emergency declaration, but in the Constitution, in the state Constitution, a concurrent resolution would require the governor's signature. So any of these steps would essentially require two-thirds support in the General Assembly to overcome an expected veto. So from my perspective, I think we should pursue that, but I think these changes are going to need to be made through constitutional amendment. Through a constitutional amendment approach, we could pass in the General Assembly, in the House and Senate, send it to you, the voters, for approval. So this would give you a direct say in what sort of authority our governor should have in an emergency situation, how that power should be limited to preserve an appropriate balance of power, which I personally think is very important, and can insist on collaboration and most certainly transparency. These are steps that we are most certainly taking a look at, and I can tell you I'm personally looking at both the statutory change, which I proposed, as well as how to capture the intent of that statutory change in a constitutional proposal that you as the voter would have the opportunity to weigh in on. Again, if you have a question for me this afternoon, it's star 3. Let me read you the result. For those of you who were on the call at the outset, we had I asked you three different options in terms of a path forward for Pennsylvania. 18% of you said that you believe we should remain under the stay-at-home order from Governor Wolf until he decides it's appropriate for a county or region to open. 48% believe that we should slowly reopen Pennsylvania businesses according to CDC health and safety standards and practicing social distancing. And 34% of you believe that Pennsylvania should fully reopen immediately. So appreciate your response to those questions. So let me get to my second question for you. And again, star three if you have a question for me, star three. My second question for you, and again, you can register your view right there from with your phone. In an effort to ensure appropriate checks, we just talked about this issue, so perfect lead-in. In an effort to ensure appropriate checks and balances between the branches of Pennsylvania's government, I and my colleague, Senator John Udicek, have introduced legislation that would change the governor's powers during an emergency declaration to require more transparency and collaboration during future emergencies. Do you believe that changes ought to be made to the governor's current emergency declaration powers, the authority of the governor? Press 1 if you believe that changes need to be made to the governor's existing powers during an emergency declaration. Press 2 if you feel that no changes need to be made to the governor's existing powers during an emergency declaration. And you can press star 3 if you have no opinion. So again, going back to this issue of the authority that the governor has under a declaration of emergency, press 1 if you believe changes need to be made to that power. Press 2 if you believe that no changes need to be made to the governor's existing powers. And press 3 if you have no opinion on the matter. And I'll give you a few minutes to, you'll have actually probably about 20 minutes to register an opinion on that. I'll leave that open. Okay, let's, again, if you have a question for me, it's star 3. Let me get here to our next question. I believe it's Eileen. Eileen, you've been very patient. Thanks for joining the call this afternoon. I think you have a question about data.
Yes. It just seems so ironic that we need to make decisions on a daily basis, kind of, and yet the information can be at least a week old or more. Now, is there any way to get more timely information, especially the Department of Health?
I appreciate the question, and this has been a real frustration of mine also, is the timely reporting of data, the results of testing, and when you look around the Commonwealth, there's been a real inconsistency in terms of, I'll give you the Lancaster County example, which is what I'm most familiar with. The data that's being reported by our coroner, for example, does not line up with the Department of Health. And some of that is information lag. There's a delay on the reporting, and there is some reconciliation that takes place. But I'm also very concerned, and I've talked about this throughout the call, on the lack of transparency with respect to the methodology of the data that's being reported and the decision making, and I think the residents of this Commonwealth are owed a transparent data informed process that protects public health, both protects public health and restores our economy. And that's something that I've been calling for nearly since the very beginning of this pandemic, and for the governor and the Secretary of Health to involve the people's elected representatives, the General Assembly, in the process, in the decision-making. I think that's been a real shortcoming, and again, why I think we need to make changes to the authority that the governor has under an emergency declaration to include greater transparency and collaboration. But you've hit on what I think is a very very important issue. So appreciate the question very much. If you have a question for me, it is star 3, and Cindy, are you there, Cindy? Hi, Cindy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
And so I I'm understanding that 34% on this call are saying that they think we should fully reopen. I'm fully in this stay at home still. My family's been hit by the virus. We've had it. We've had deaths. And, you know, I see other polls where there's anywhere from 60 to 70% of people in our area, in the Lancaster area, are not anxious to have things reopened quickly. And I'm just wondering, I mean, I get it. Believe me, we have been hit on the economic side in my family as well. So I understand that there is an anxiousness to open up businesses, but I'm wondering why it feels so partisan and why there is a real anxiousness to get back. And I respect, Wes, what you said earlier or on the call, but I'm just wondering why we're pushing so fast when the CDC guidelines, we haven't met them yet in Lancaster County.
I certainly appreciate the question. And like you, I'm disappointed that this has seemingly become partisan, I think unnecessarily so. So much of the rhetoric that I've experienced recently, certainly in Harrisburg, has not been helpful, where Republicans who are calling for a plan to restore and reopen the economy are being characterized as choosing profits over people and not caring about public health. And then quite frankly, you hear some of the opposite rhetoric where folks are saying that Democrats are only concerned or are not concerned for the economy. I think most members, I hope, believe that we can and should focus on both. I certainly believe that we can take steps to protect public health, and we should have a data-informed process in place that both protects public health but also restores our economy. I have, without question, have noticed a real uptick in the number of calls and the desperate calls that have come into this office, that have come to me over the last 2 weeks in particular, from folks who are really at the end of the line. They are concerned that they've lost their income, they've lost businesses, they're in debt, they can't make payments, they can't put food on the table, they're not sure what they're going to do tomorrow. And it's an emergency situation for them, and folks are, and they're asking legitimate questions. Do I risk a fine? Do I risk going back to work so that I can pay the bills and I can put food on the table for my family? And I think that's why there's urgency. And I think the reason why many folks and why I'm concerned is that it seems to me that the goalposts have shifted. At the outset of this crisis, on March 16th, what was presented as the objective by most who were making public statements was to flatten the curve, was to ensure that our healthcare system would not be overwhelmed, that we had the ICU bed capacity, we had the ventilator capacity, and it's quite clear that we have done that. And it seems as though the goalpost and the objective has now shifted and is undefined. And I think that's why folks are extremely, extremely frustrated. I think there's an incredible inconsistency between some of the barriers that have been put in place to Pennsylvania business and what's been utilized as an essential versus non-essential business list in Pennsylvania as compared to many of our neighboring states, and what the federal government is outlining as per their guidelines. We have been far more restrictive. I think constituents, many of my constituents are right that they could and they can safely go back to work, put in place appropriate procedures and protocols to protect both their customers and their employees. And I think we ought to do that. So I think we can protect public health. I think we can put a plan in place and begin restoring and rebuilding our economy. It certainly is going to be phased. I think we're many weeks, months away from rock concerts, for example. But can garden centers open today? I think absolutely, yes, they can. Can barbershops open and hairstylists and put in place the social distancing and have the appropriate PPE? I think they can. And so I think that's why there's been such concern and frustration. So I think we can do both. I'm committed to pursuing a data-informed plan to do both. But I appreciate the question very much and participating in the call. Again, if you have a call or a question for me at *3, let me go ahead and read the responses to the questions that I've had from that I just presented you. 77% of you on the call stated that you believe that changes should be made to the governor's existing powers, and 18% believe that no changes should be made. I want to go right back to the question that I just had. There's one point that I wanted to make that I didn't make. One of the other concerns that I have, and why I think many folks are very concerned about why we have such a extreme shutdown as compared to many other governors, many other neighboring states, at the same time we're seeing an incredibly high infection and death rate at our nursing homes. And this has been a real area of focus also, is ensuring that data is included in decisions when to reopen Lancaster County, and ensuring, most importantly, that our nursing facilities are getting the assistance, the help that that they need. And again, that's why we worked just recently on April 29th, to support critical new funding for our nursing homes so they can better deal with these challenges. So that ties into the previous conversation as well as the question earlier on the data that we're seeing. So thank you very much for the question. Let me go here to, I believe it is Mabel. Do I have that right, Mabel? I think you have a question actually about barbershops. Go ahead.
I'm wondering, with the high training that barbershops have in disinfecting, et cetera, when they might be able to open.
Well, I appreciate the question. I wish I had a definitive answer for you. I don't. I believe that I'm looking here at the, again, if you go to, for those that have not been there in terms of the green, yellow, or red, yellow, green phases that the governor is currently utilizing for the reopening. If you go to governor.pa.gov and plan for PA, you can go and you can see the additional detail here. I'm just taking a quick glance here. I believe that that the yellow phase allows for, no, I'm incorrect. Even during the yellow phase, if we were to reach the yellow phase in a couple of weeks here in Lancaster County, indoor recreation, health and wellness facilities, and personal care services such as gyms, spas, hair salons, nail salons would all remain closed. So that would not be eligible for reopening until we hit the green phase, which according to the current models, we're some time away from. Again, as I said to I think the earlier question just a few moments ago, I think there are reasonable protocols, procedures that can be put in place to allow for many of those businesses to reopen with an appropriate mitigation plan. That's my view. But according to the governor, that would not be eligible for reopening until the green phase. So appreciate the question, which I wish I had better feedback, better news for you on that front. Let's see here. I have Judy is next. Judy, you've been on the call very patiently. I don't have any information here on a question, so I'm a little nervous. I don't know what's coming my way. Are you there, Judy? All right. I don't think I have Judy. Again, it's star 3 if you have a question for me this evening or this afternoon, excuse me. I typically do these events in the evening, so if I've said evening throughout the call, I apologize. Chris. Chris, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Yes.
How are you?
Very well, very well. And thank you for this meeting and time and stuff today.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the feedback and certainly a lot of interest on the call for sure. So I think you have a question. If I'm reading it, the little information I have, it looks like something about mask requirements. So I don't know if I'll have the answer, but I'll do my best.
Well, my question is this. When would you guys be able to, like, open, like, the furnitures and, like, Goodwills and stuff, like, stores and stuff like that, and, like, thrift shops and stuff like that reopen again? And also with the masks and stuff, when are you guys planning on dropping at and stuff for the employees? Now, I will admit we have made some changes as store associates for Walmart and everything. And everything, because I do work in the front and everything, and we went from a heavier fabric to a lighter fabric. We just went and purchased some that a lady made for us and everything, and they feel a little bit more better and everything. But like I said, some of the, like, the first responders and stuff, some of them are really not liking the masses and stuff. And my question is that, when are you guys planning on, like, opening things like that and stuff?
Well, I appreciate the question. And, again, these decisions are being made according to the governor's plan for Pennsylvania. And so for a lot of those detailed questions, I would encourage folks to go. You're certainly more welcome to submit a comment or question through my website at senatoramit.com or call here at the district office, 627-0036. Again, 627-0036. We'll do our best to get you an answer to those specific questions. But again, for those types of questions, I would encourage folks to go to governor.pa.gov. You can click on the governor's plan for PA, and there's information there that'll answer a lot of those questions. Which restrictions will remain in place, work setting restrictions, social restrictions per each phase, green, yellow, and the red phase. So encourage you to check that out, and certainly if you have any additional questions, our staff will do the very best we can to try to help you out with that. A couple of medical questions here, Doc. You're still with us. The first question, I'm going to go to Joseph here. Looks like a question about blood type and COVID. And then there's another question I see here down the line. Transmission via mosquito, but let me go to Joseph first. Are you there, Joseph?
Yeah, sure, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead. So, do I understand your question is is there any relationship between blood type and the likelihood of COVID-19? Is that right? And you're asking specifically about O blood type.
Yes, thank you. First, I want to thank you for this opportunity, but I have heard from a couple sources, two of them reliable. It's possible that O positive, O negative blood types could be less susceptible to the symptoms or even immune. And I realize that this question probably cannot be answered. It may cause complacency among the populace. But the other question, part of the question is, how soon would I be able to be tested to find out if I ever had this coronavirus or find out if I'm immune to it?
Thank you. So question about blood type, any information on the connection between blood type and COVID and the availability of antibody testing. Doctor, if you could maybe try to take that on.
Sure. Thank you, Joseph, for your question. First of all, regarding the blood type, I have not seen any data to support yay or nay, whether or not your blood type would protect you against the COVID virus. The only the only time that blood type might come into play is when we start talking about the convalescent plasma that you might have heard of. So those that recover from COVID are now able to donate their blood, which is then spun down, and the antibodies, that's the convalescent plasma, that can then be injected into people who are suffering from COVID, and that can, those antibodies that are in the convalescent plasma can help them recover from the virus. It'll help fight the virus. At that point, it is important to know what your blood type is, to know that the blood coming into your system matches. So that's the only time the blood type would come up, but to my knowledge, there's nothing out there saying that a certain blood type would protect you from COVID. The second question about when to be tested, so there's really two types of testing. There's the traditional test, the nasal swab, that tells us whether or not you have COVID right now, and then there's the antibody testing, which is, I think, what you might be referring to. The first, the nasal swab, we're still, at least within WellSpan right now, we're still primarily recommending testing only for those that are symptomatic, or for those being placed in nursing homes, or for those being prepped for surgery. Those are the three cases that we recommend it. So for those of us in the community right now, if you're not having symptoms, we would not recommend being tested, primarily because if you're asymptomatic, the false negative rate goes up significantly, meaning that the test could come back saying that you're negative when in fact you could be, the virus could be growing in your system. It's just not strong enough yet. As far as antibody testing, there isn't enough science around it right now to recommend antibody testing widely in the community for two reasons. The first of all is that they haven't developed a great test yet that's accurate to say whether or not someone is immune. Right now, it's really what we would call a quantitative, which is really just a yes or no. And what we really need is more of a qualitative test to say there's 50% of antibodies in your system or 60% of antibodies in your system, rather than just the yes or no. The second piece is that even if it shows that you have antibodies in your system, this virus has not been out long enough to know whether or not you could become reinfected. So there's no proof right now to say that even if you have antibodies, that would protect you from a potential second wave. So at this time, it's really not going to change what we do with you in society. If you do have antibodies, we're still going to recommend that you keep social distance. We're still going to recommend that you wear a mask until you're told otherwise, hand washing, all that stuff. So there's really not a benefit to doing the antibody testing at this time.
Thank you very much for that. Let me go to, and so Lisa and Tom, I got two questions here I'm going to try to sneak in with the time that we have left. First, Kathy has a question about the Department of Revenue and submitting taxes. And so perhaps you'll be able to provide some, if you've talked to some folks in your network that have had similar challenges and what you're advising. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi, I don't have any advice. I submitted my taxes back on March 3rd, and ordinarily I wouldn't care because it's usually just $2 or $3 or whatever, but this time I'm getting like a $3,000 refund, and I keep going on the website, where's my refund, and type in the Social Security number, the amount of refund, and they're still saying they have no record of it. But when I asked the post office to trace it, it got there, and it was placed in the post office box. And so
Kathy, I apologize. I cut off your question there. Tom or Lisa, have you heard of similar circumstances, and could you offer any advice on that? So it sounds like the taxes were submitted to revenue. They do not have a record of it, but the post office has record or has a tracking number. Anything you can offer on that?
Unfortunately, no, Ryan. I think what I would, frankly, if I had heard that story, probably what I would have suggested they do is contact their state representative or state senator to find out more.
Okay.
The only reason the only explanation that might be part of the equation here is, as you well know, that the with everybody at the state working remotely, I'm sure business as usual is stressed, and it could be, that letter may be just about anywhere. So I I wish I could be more helpful, particularly given the amount involved, Kathy. But I would have told you to talk to your senator or representative.
Yeah, I apologize. I cut you off there, Kathy. If you could, I wasn't sure, Tom, if this was systematic, if you had heard more folks talking about this. But Kathy, what I would have you do is give us a call here at the district office, 717-627-0036. So Kathy, give us a call here, 627-0036. We'll look into it, and we can help walk you through what the next steps are. I apologize. That was my technical error here on my computer screen, but I think we got enough of the question. I'm running out of time here. One thing I did, Tom and Lisa, want you to maybe address real quickly, if you can do it in a minute, is I have a question here from Tom, and Tom is asking about business requirements for wearing masks and gloves and just a concern over not seeing everyone following through with those directives. Can you talk a little bit about maybe what the chamber can or the chamber is doing to help make sure businesses have information, what is appropriate, PPE, social distancing protocols, and what you're doing to provide that support to the business community?
So this is a part of our economic recovery plan, and this particular area is something that Lisa is overseeing, so I'm going to flip it to her.
Awesome.
So I think the critical thing right now is there is CDC guidance, and the guidance still holds. And so masks and PPE in business operations is necessary and will continue to be necessary as we move along. I think the key thing there is if you're seeing an employer that's not complying, the first step would be to talk to the employer and ensure that they're familiar with practices. Certainly my office, EDC, Economic Development Company, or the Lancaster Chamber could also be really good resources. Tom's got a website that's full of guidance for businesses. It is a very confusing landscape for businesses, so sometimes people just don't know what they're supposed to be doing. And right now, our intent is to try to equip businesses with that information. We want businesses to be operating, and we want them to be operating safely. So it's not about gotcha or trying to get a business in trouble. It's really trying to equip businesses in a very confusing landscape with what the basic requirements are. The other piece I would just add is PPE right now, which is a term all of us didn't know 2 months ago, but now we do. There's different levels of masks, different levels of types of protective equipment. And that's a confusing landscape. And it's also right now very hard for some businesses, especially smaller businesses, to find those types of materials. So we're working on a source list for that. Some of our partner organizations have source lists where if a business is trying to get that type of equipment but can't find it, there are lists of vendors that are out there. Hopefully down the road, again, in the next couple of weeks as we move through this plan, we're looking at things like mass purchasing of PPE for small businesses, just to make it as easy as we can for businesses to get back into operations and to operate safely. So, Senator, I hope I've answered the question appropriately. I would defer to the Lancaster Chamber site as a wonderful source of information for businesses on how to operate and how to operate safely.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And so we're coming to the conclusion of the call. And again, I just want to thank everyone for participating this afternoon. There are a number of questions we did not get to. There's, again, a ton of interest in this call, a ton of interest in this issue, obviously. So if you didn't get a chance to speak to me, I would encourage you to visit my website at SenatorAument.com, A-U-M-E-N-T, SenatorAument.com. Submit a comment, or you can certainly call our district office here at 717-627-0036. Feel free to submit the question. My staff and I would be more than happy to look into it, including forwarding a question to a member of the panel if you had a question for one of the panelists this afternoon. And we'll try to get back to you in a timely manner. Again, if you're not receiving information from our office with respect to COVID-19 response and would like that information, please visit the website regularly. Highly encourage you to check out our Reimagine a Stronger Pennsylvania link there tons of information there. Sign up for the e-newsletter, and you're certainly more than welcome to join the conversation, if you dare, on social media, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at SenatorAmit.com. All three sites at Senator Amit, not .com, I apologize. All those three sites, I think Instagram is Senator_Amit, but the other two, Facebook and Twitter, at Senator Amit. So, again, thank you so much for your participation this afternoon. Please do keep in touch with us. Let us know if we can be of service to you. And, again, want to express my thanks to Lisa, Tom, Shama, and Dr. Gasparic. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful afternoon.